It's nice to be here at Zen Center this morning. I'm a guy who kind of likes routines. Now, I know I'm a Zen teacher and I should be ready for anything, and I try to be, but I do kind of like routines, and I especially like Sunday mornings. And I leave my home in St. Paul and I drive here, and there's not much traffic, which is really nice, and I go over the river. And I see downtown Minneapolis, which is beautiful in the morning. And I enter this neighborhood, and I come here, and I park, and I walk into the backyard. I go through those little arches back there, and it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm home. My other home is here. And I come in, and I see the same people usually. There are certain people who are always here early on Sunday mornings, it seems like. Dave, Darla, Ann, some other folks. And it's just reassuring to see them. These are our Sangha lions. They're here and they're doing the work and making everyone welcome. And I come in here and I see these familiar faces, and certain people always sit in the same place every Sunday, and there's something reassuring about that. So that's all pretty nice. The plumbing situation threw me a little bit. We're not sure the plumbing's going to hold out. We're not sure how long the plumbing's going to hold out in our building. But we have two things going for us. Number one, we have a lot of good karma built up here. And number two, we all know how to show restraint. So, sorry, can everyone hear me okay? I feel like talking in my quiet voice today, if I may. So I had a talk planned, and it was going to be a really nice talk. And it was going to be called One Leaf. It was going to be about one leaf. And I was hoping to kind of avoid, the cascade of words. Sometimes I get so tired of the words. But I changed my mind, and that happened about 11 or 12 o'clock Tuesday evening. I changed my mind. I said, I'm going to have to talk about something else. People are going to be hurting. People are going to be concerned about how things are going, about how the election went. And I don't make any assumptions about political views in our Sangha. We welcome a great variety of views here. We don't expect people to be a certain way. And I think we keep an open mind. And I'm certainly not advocating any political position today. But what I do know for sure is that a lot of members of our Sangha and the general public, people throughout the country, are really hurting. There's a lot of pain right now. And I've talked to people, and I think there is a lot of anxiety. And people are saying that they're having a hard time sleeping. There's a lot of crying. A lot of people have been doing a lot of crying. And especially there is fear. Especially, I think, vulnerable groups in our society. Immigrants, gay people, transgender people, religious minorities, racial minorities, women, especially women. And I know a lot of children are having a hard time, which makes me very, very sad. And it does seem that hatred is in a strong position right now. And I think maybe incidents of harassment are up. At least there's anecdotal evidence about that. So I have to address this. And I'm sorry if you came here hoping for refuge and thinking, well, this is one place where I won't have to think about that stuff and I can get a straight Dharma talk. I'm sorry if that's what you wanted. And if anyone wants to go and would rather not sort of deal with these things this morning, that's perfectly okay. And I'm sorry if my timing is off. If you've been kind of working through things and you're ready to move on and I'm pulling you back into it, I'm sorry. But here at Zen Center, we lean into the pain. We lean into the difficulty. We lean into the truth. That's what we do. We do that. And we do that when we're ready and when we're strong enough, but that's what we do. And together, I think, we acknowledge the pain we're in. And together, we say, we're going to be okay. And that's pretty important. That's pretty important. Just be in here. So the title of my talk is What to Do When Things Go Bad. And in fact, this is not about politics. This really takes a wider view than that. I'm giving this talk in my pastoral care role. We all face difficult times personally. And if we haven't yet, we will sometime. Illness, big setbacks in our personal lives, maybe a death in our family. Our children have hardships, and that breaks our heart. And we face difficult times collectively as a society. I think of my parents' generation. I think of how they grew up during the Depression, when they were just graduating from high school. The war started, the war against fascism. And after that was the Cold War. It's like they never got a break. They went through all this stuff together. And they were pretty pretty stoic about it. So the things I'm going to talk about apply to all of these things. I'm going to talk about how to get through difficult times, whether it's personal, whether it's collective. And it's pretty simple. It's based on my experience, what I've learned as a Zen student and as a Zen teacher, what I've learned in my personal life, because I've been around for a while. And I offer these tips for what they're worth. And I can't know your individual situation, so please just take what you can use and leave the rest. Be skeptical, decide for yourself. These are simple Zen-based techniques, and there are 10 of them. What is a Dharma talk without a list? And they all kind of merge into each other, but here's what they are. One, acknowledge. Two, be present. Three, begin to restore. Four, build strength. Five, reach out. Six, engage parental mind. 7, act. 8, keep an open heart. 9, protect the heart. 10, stay connected to the big picture. So I hope to take you through some changes this morning. And one more thing before I start on this list, I hope to avoid telling you how to feel. I saw a comment on Facebook in response to a video that a friend of mine posted with some of his thoughts. A young woman said, "Thank you for validating the feelings I've had. In the past 12 hours, I've been told how, when, and where I can feel and express my feelings of being unsafe." No one should tell you how to feel. This is a short quote from Lion's Roar. That's an online Buddhist magazine, or an online and hard copy both. And they have an article, you can go there now, it's Buddhist Teachers Respond to the Election Results. And it's a good resource, and I'll be quoting from it. And a teacher said, named Ethan Nickturn said, "Please remember it's okay to feel exactly what you feel." Okay? So I'm going to start with number one. Number one is acknowledge. Pretty simple. Yeah, that happened. That really happened. And the next day you wake up and for 3 seconds you're fine. And then, oh, that happened. And again, that's still there. That's still there. You come back to it. And it may seem like acknowledging it is not something that you really need to work on because it's there in your face all the time. But in fact, I'm not talking about that kind of acknowledgement. Of course, cognitively, we know what happened. But I'm talking about acknowledging this on a deeper level. This is not about thinking. This is about letting it in on the heart level. And in fact, we have many ways of avoiding that kind of acknowledgement. Distraction, or denial, or indifference. I don't care. I'm done. I'm done. Now, some avoidance, especially at first, is okay. We need that to not be overwhelmed at times of great difficulty. Our friend Norman Fisher said, "It's okay to freak out, grieve, and vent for a while, hold each other's hands. Then we can get back to work, as always, for the good." Eventually, you face the thing, and in the gentlest way you can, and not all at once. And doing this in stages and taking a rest is not avoidance. That's just good sense. You know when you're ready. What does this mean practically? This means practically when something bad happens, give yourself time to mourn. Set aside time for mourning. Take a walk around the lake today if you can. And know also that the need to mourn does not always fit your schedule, that it's going to pop up. And when it pops up, you have to give it its due. And maybe you can't pay attention to it right then, but you do as soon as you can. You will find a time. You will arrange a time. Number two is be present. Having acknowledged it, spend time with it. Hold it, whatever the thing. This is the basic activity of Zen Buddhism. In Zen Buddhism, our practice, it's pretty simple. We find a quiet place, and we sit in a good upright posture, and we breathe, we follow our breath, we come back, we come back again. We let the thoughts go. We see how busy our minds are. And we sit long enough that we get to that quiet place, that quieter place. And this may take great effort, and this may take a lot of time. But we can get there. And when it's quiet, things come up. And we let them come up, and we spend time with them. And we feel them in our bones. We feel them at the heart level. They rise up, and then they're gone, and they leave no trace. They're gone. This is in opposition to avoidance, which does not allow the thing to be gone. It just stays there. And we're with these things in a non-thinking way, and we find the emotion that's beneath the thought. And the danger when things go bad is that you'll get trapped in your thoughts and never process the emotions that are underneath. Doug Phillips, Empty Sky Sangha, he said after the election, "I was struck by how easily we are pulled from the immediacy of this life in this moment by thoughts of a future that none of us can predict. How easily we abandon our practice of being fully here now for a misery-producing fantasy." If you are thinking constantly about bad things that may happen in the future, that's not a good or a healthy thing. Now, planning for the future, thinking about what might happen, facing that, that's fine. But ruminating about it is another thing. And you must interrupt this cycle. You must find a way to get out of your head. You can get back to the thinking later. If you interrupt the cycle now, your thinking later will be more effective. And the good news is you can do it. If you are motivated enough, you can do this. You can meditate more. You can change your schedule to allow you to meditate more. You can engage in mindful activity. If you don't know how to do these things, you can come to Zen Center. You can get more training. You can talk to a teacher, one of our teachers here. You can talk to a therapist. You can go to some other tradition if Zen doesn't seem to be working. But you can come here and you can do the chants and you can do the simple activities. And one way to do it, which we talk about a lot here, is a way to get out of your mind is to find this thing in your body. If you've been very stressed this week, I'll bet there's a manifestation in your body. And you may feel it right now. You may be aware of it. And maybe not. But if you were to sit quietly enough, I think you would find it. And when you find it, you stay with it. You're quiet with it. You don't think about it. You let it be. You feel it. And you say, okay, what does this have to tell me? What's going to happen if I stay present with this physical feeling in my body? Just stay with it. Feel it when it's time to feel it. and take a break when it's time to take a break. Let it in. Let it in. This is right meditation, right mindfulness. Number three is begin to restore. Take care of yourself. Do what is healthy for you. This is right action. This is part of the eightfold path that the Buddha set out, right action. Because if you are restoring yourself, you are preparing for action. You are preparing to do the right thing. This is also right effort. It takes some effort to do what's restorative. What is the best thing? I think soft, gentle, routine, familiar actions are wonderful. I did a lot of dishes on Wednesday. For some people, sewing is very relaxing. Raking leaves is something I like to do, or running. Some kind of gentle work. These things are wonderful. And there's some things we can avoid. For some folks listening to news, I've kind of taken a break from the news. I'm kind of back to, well, I'm reading the headlines. That's as far as I'm going to go. I'll get back there, but a little break was good. A little break from social media can be good. Social media, it can really get you. There's some good stuff on there, but it can really get you going. And it's disturbing. And if I spend about 20 minutes on Facebook and I'm attentive, I can feel the changes in my body that happen. TV and video games, anything that encourages your grasping mind, that makes you out there, oh, I want this, I want that, I want that, which is taking you away from your center and taking away from your hope of being really quiet. It's like we've got this hamster running on the hamster wheel in the mind, you know. Give the guy a break. Give that little hamster a break. So again and again, you say, yeah, that happened. That's still there. I can't fix that right now. And I don't want to think about that right now. This is not the time. But what I can do is I can do this thing I'm engaged in right now. I can rake these leaves. I can pull that rake toward me right now. And if I can really do that, I can't help but notice the beauty of that action and the beauty of these leaves. And for goodness sake, not all is lost. The leaves are still here. I am raking the lawn. Number four is build strength. Again, this is right action and right effort. Right intention, too, because building strength is preparing to act effectively. My son said on Facebook, I'm just reminding everyone to please pay attention to your family, friends, and yourself in the coming months. This may sound silly, but eat healthy things. Get good sleep if you can. Drink plenty of water. See your doctor. And engage in the things that recharge you and keep you on track. Take care of each other, but also remember that you cannot take proper care of others if you do not care for yourself. So we want you to take care of yourself. Sometimes it feels like I've got to sacrifice myself because that'll help everybody. No, everybody wants you to care for yourself because that will make you more effective. Because we're going to need you. We're going to need your strong focus. And this week, I've been very focused. I don't want to get lost in my head, and I don't want to be ineffectual. I have responsibilities. I have things to contribute. So commit yourself to becoming strong. Watch what you take into your body and mind. Get some exercise. And maintain your practice. And you can do this. You can do this if you wish to, with some effort and some real skill and maybe some luck. Maybe some luck that you have enough of an opening in your life that you have the time to do this. But you can allow the chatter to cease and you can go to that very quiet place and you can allow things to come up. And whatever that is, even the worst things, you can allow those things to come up and you can be so quiet that you can really be in their presence. And it's okay because you're taking the self out of it and you're going to act from that place of interconnectedness. You can do this. Number five is reach out. It's just good to have mutual support. And this comes from the Buddhist principle of Sangha, which is an absolutely essential element of the Triple Treasure, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So reach out to the Zen Center Sangha. Reach out to family. Reach out to friends. Reach out maybe to people you don't know. Hang out here. Make connections. Today at tea, stick around. Talk to somebody you don't know. Ask, so how was your week? And you'll probably get a story, and you'll probably have a story too. Talk to a teacher. You are so welcome to contact one of the teachers here and just talk for a little bit, set up an appointment, talk things through. If you want a silent, strong connection, come to Rohatsu, come to one of our retreats. You won't be talking, but you'll be with people on that really deep level, making that connection. Number six is engage parental mind. Now, that's a phrase I've heard, parental mind, and I don't know if that's an actual thing that someone has defined. I don't know if it has a definition. But I just responded to it really instinctively. I think I know what parental mind is. I think of being with my son when he was little, and just without question, you can do anything when you're walking with your child because you're doing it for them, and you take the self out of it. You're doing it for them. You can do anything you need to. You can stand up to anybody. That's parental mind. I remember once a young man I know named Miles. He was my co-author. We wrote a book together years ago when he was had gotten in a fight with some people. He was a really a troubled young man. And he'd gotten a restraining order against these people, but he didn't know if that would work. And we were walking downtown, and it was really the first time he had been out of his house in about a week. And I just remember how it felt being with him then. I was thinking, like, if those guys come around now, if I see those guys, they are going to be so sorry if they try to do anything. Just completely, you know, that was it. That was it. And that's not really like me. But that's parental mind. You protect others. And you can cultivate it. And parental mind, that is the bodhisattva spirit. This is stand up in the moment. Katagiri Roshi, founder of our temple, said, as simply as you can, you have to stand up in the moment and then let go. Stand up in the moment and then let go. Parental mind arises from the two previous steps, building strength and reaching out. If you're strong and if you're seeking interconnectedness with others, you will develop parental mind. And I had a nice conversation with Bouchot, I think, Wednesday night. He's upstairs, I think, doing the intro now. But he was talking about how tragic times allow us to connect with the universality of suffering. This is a gift. This is a gift. It's a painful gift. But it's a gift that will help us be better people. So parental mind. Or maybe it's cooperating mind. Maybe it's not that I know what to do and I'm going to take care of you, but maybe it's I'm working with everybody else to take care of all of us. Whatever it is, what matters is that you're working for the benefit of others, and in the process, you let go of your own needs, at least for a while, at least when it's needed. So parental mind is about assuming responsibility. I was grateful this week for the responsibility I have of giving this talk, because it allowed me to shift pretty fast from kind of a stunned silence and my own private difficulty to what can I do for others. So I was able to go pretty fast into action, into what can I do for my spouse and my children and my friends and Sangha and country and my dear planet Earth and the most vulnerable members of our society. What can I do? So it's parental mind and it's humble learning mind too. Just because I want to help doesn't mean I have all the answers. I have a lot to learn myself. And number seven is act. Act. This is essential to the practice of Zen Buddhism. It is one step on the Eightfold Path, right action. And it is essential to the Bodhisattva ideal. Bodhisattvas do stuff. They don't just sit there and wait for us to worship them. They do stuff. And sometimes there can be kind of a mistaken view about Buddhism, that it's about acceptance and passivity, and that our ideal is escaping to some kind of nirvana and maybe living in a cave and experiencing bliss. That's not what it's about. That's not what it's about. It's about acting in the world. It's about interconnectedness. If we're interconnected with all beings, how can we help but spend our time reaching out to make everything better for them? What else could possibly matter compared to that? But it's not always easy. And maybe you're not ready for action. And maybe you can't even contemplate action right now. And that's okay. We're not doing all 10 steps today. Maybe you're on step one. You know, you're still struggling to acknowledge it. Or step two, you're still spending time with it. Or you're just beginning to restore. And that's perfectly okay. You need a refuge sometimes. You need to rest. And maybe you need a week or a month or a year. And that's perfectly okay. But action eventually is what we tend toward. Action consistent with our abilities. Norman Fisher, dark times bring out the heroic in us. We each need to do what we can do. And for some of us, that may seem like just the smallest thing. I can only do the smallest little thing. That's okay. That's okay. Maybe you're just maintaining. Maybe you're just surviving. That's great. Survive for all beings. You're helping them all. Or for others, maybe you can do things for those around you, things you might call little things. That's great. For others, this could be a full tilt commitment to publicly working to change things, and that's great too. All of these things have an effect and contribute to the well-being of our society. So be proud of what you do, and don't compare yourself to others. Just do what you can do. And don't think that because you can only do this little tiny step right now that it doesn't matter or you're not contributing. Those little steps are essential to the well-being of you, which means to the well-being of all of us. If you don't want to get out of bed in the morning, you don't want to get dressed, you don't want to leave your house, but you do drag yourself out of bed, and you get dressed, and you leave the house, and you go to the grocery store, or maybe you come here to Zen Center, I see that heroic effort, and I honor you for it. And I know how hard it is. And I thank you for contributing to the well-being of all of us. Thank you. I have a student who said this week, in the stunned phase, you just put one foot in front of the other. And eventually you'll be able to feel your legs. So act. We're going to need you. Take those heroic actions, whether they seem very large or very small. We're going to need everyone, and everyone can help. Our friend Paula Arai. I remind myself what power I do have today. I will smile and be kind. Zenju Earthlin Manuel said, many of us have been practicing Buddha's teachings or walking a spiritual journey forever and preparing for every moment of our existence. We are ready and have been waiting for this time. Our rage, pain, and anger are to be exposed if only for us to transform and mature with it. In Buddhist practice, we say congratulations because now is the time we have been practicing for. No more just practicing the dance. We must now dance. Number 8, keep an open heart. This too is the essence of our practice. Even in hateful times, not responding with hatred. Can we do that? We know how much hatred damages us and how ineffective it is. Keeping an open heart means reaching out to those we disagree with and deeply listening to them, connecting with them at the heart level. while being honest and firm about behavior, which is simply wrong. This is something I've talked about quite a lot lately. Roshi Pat Enkyo O'Hara. And I realize how vital it is for all of us to listen to all the sounds of this unhappy nation. What suffering has led to the anger and hatred that has arisen? And why are so many of us surprised at this outpouring? Perhaps we have not been listening to the cries of the world with ears of wisdom and determination. Norman Fisher again. Think of what the Dalai Lama has gone through in his lifetime. He maintains daily practice. He maintains kindness for everyone, though he has lost his country and his culture at the hands of a brutal regime. Yet he doesn't hate the Chinese and finds redeeming features in them. He maintains his sense of humor. He has turned his tragedy into a teaching for the world. And as someone said, well, I'm not the Dalai Lama and I'm not really there yet, but I can try, maybe next week. But yeah, let's not lose our sense of humor. Maybe there's not so much humor today in this talk, but humor could prove to be the sharpest tool in our toolbox. Number 9, protect the heart. We keep an open heart, but not naively. We don't expose ourselves to harm in an uninformed or reckless way, like we don't say, please come in here and walk on us. Sometimes in caring for our community and our planet and our people and everyone, our people is everyone, we have to be very, very firm. And we have those fierce gods and goddesses to inspire us. This is right action, and this is the Bodhisattva spirit. And we protect one another. Everyone is welcome here. Everyone is safe here. And number 10 is stay connected to the big picture. I may have borrowed that phrase from someone else. I'm not sure. But it doesn't matter. This, again, is the essence of our practice. Stay connected to the big picture. And again, we go to that quiet place where we find the real quiet, where the self drops away. And this is the place where love and right action and joy come from. This is the place of the big view, and that includes all creatures throughout space and time. And Norman, whom I'm relying on heavily this morning. Bodhisattvas are committed to their practice, which means to sit, to get up, and to sweep the garden. The whole world, close in and far away, every day, no matter what. They have always done this, they always will. Good times, bad times. They keep on going just the same. Bodhisattvas play the long game. They have confidence in the power of goodness over time. And the big picture tells us that we don't know what results will come from strange turns of events or from our own actions. I know that the most difficult things in my life have made me what I am and have helped me to connect with others and have made me more effective in the world. So we cannot know all the implications of things that happen. So, to sum up these 10 things, we do what we can do. It's pretty simple. We can't do more than that. I'm sorry, that's how it is. But we do what we can do with an open heart and together. So, Friday morning, I was at a teacher's meeting here and I learned that Leonard Cohen had died. And I thought, oh no, this too. Everyone loved that guy so much. And Kathy and I, we were watching some videos Friday evening just to kind of honor him. So we were listening to some of his songs and we heard his most well-known song. And there is such tragedy in his voice. He really knows how it is, and he carries that with him all the time. And he has this great spiritual longing. You know that deep spiritual longing? That's what brought a lot of us here. It's so deep. I want this. I really want to be with you. And desire that other kind of longing. and joy and all of this stuff at the same time. It's all there at the same time. And he puts it all into this one word. And even though it all went wrong, I'll stand before the Lord of Song with nothing on my tongue but hallelujah. 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 Come on. Hallelujah. 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 And I thought, he has such a hunger for life. Such a hunger for life. And I felt that watching this song, listening to this song. And I thought, I'm feeling that too. I'm feeling that hunger for life. And you know, it's not over yet. And I get to do these things that I've been doing. We all do. In the next 4 days, I get to give 2 talks. I get to meet with people. I get to take the Buddhist youth group to Fort Snelling to honor the Native Americans who died there years and years ago. I get to go home and I get to help Kathy clean the garage. She is so excited about cleaning the garage. And I've got these leaves, you know, and I get to do this drive from St. Paul to Minneapolis. And I see the river and it's always been there and it connects me to those other rivers. And I see the grain elevators over there and that connects me to my past. And I'm connected to my grandparents. I'm connected to my parents. I'm connected to future generations. I'm connected to all of you. So I feel that great hunger for life that's rekindled. That doesn't mean everything is okay. It doesn't mean everything is going to be okay. It doesn't mean I can relax, because this is serious business here. We just don't know. But it does mean that there is hope. And it means that there's stuff to do. And it's stuff that we can do together. So that's my talk.